Random House Audio Publishing presents The Summons by John Grisham. Read for you by Michael Beck. Chapter 1. It came by mail, regular postage, the old-fashioned way, since the judge was almost 80 and distrusted modern devices. Forget email and even faxes. He didn't use an answering machine and had never been fond of the telephone. He pecked out his letters with both index fingers, one feeble key at a time, hunched over his old Underwood manual on a roll-top desk under the portrait of Nathan Bedford Forrest. The judge's grandfather had fought with Forrest at Shiloh and throughout the Deep South, and to him no figure in history was more revered. For 32 years, the judge had quietly refused to hold court on July 13th, Forrest's birthday. It came with another letter, a magazine, and two invoices, and was routinely placed in the law school mailbox of Professor Ray Attlee. He recognized it immediately, since such envelopes had been part of his life for as long as he could remember. It was from his father, a man he too called the judge. Professor Attlee studied the envelope, uncertain whether he should open it right there or wait a moment. Good news or bad, he never knew with the judge, though the old man was dying, and good news had been rare. It was thin and appeared to contain only one sheet of paper. Nothing unusual about that. The judge was frugal with the written word, though he'd once been known for his windy lectures from the bench. It was a business letter. That much was certain. The judge was not one for small talk, hated gossip and idle chit-chat, whether written or spoken. Iced tea with him on the porch would be a refighting of the Civil War, probably at Shiloh, where he would once again lay all blame for the Confederate defeat at the shiny, untouched boots of General Pierre G.T. Beauregard, a man he would hate even in heaven if by chance they met there. He'd be dead soon, 79 years old, with cancer in his stomach. He was overweight, a diabetic, a heavy pipe smoker, had a bad heart that had survived 3 attacks, and a host of lesser ailments that had tormented him for 20 years and were now finally closing in for the kill. The pain was constant. During their last phone call 3 weeks earlier, a call initiated by Ray because the judge thought long distance was a ripoff, the old man sounded weak and strained. They had talked for less than 2 minutes. The return address was gold embossed, Chancellor Reuben V. Attlee, 25th Chancery District, Ford County Courthouse, Clanton, Mississippi. Ray slid the envelope into the magazine and began walking. Judge Attlee no longer held the office of Chancellor. The voters had retired him 9 years earlier, a bitter defeat from which he would never recover. 32 years of diligent service to his people, and they tossed him out in favor of a younger man with radio and television ads. The judge had refused to campaign. He claimed he had too much work to do, and more important, the people knew him well, and if they wanted to re-elect him, then they would do so. His strategy had seemed arrogant to many. He carried Ford County, but got shellacked in the other 5. It took 3 years to get him out of the courthouse. His office on the second floor had survived a fire and had missed 2 renovations. The judge had not allowed them to touch it with paint or hammers. When the county supervisors finally convinced him that he had to leave or be evicted, he boxed up 3 decades worth of useless files and notes and dusty old books and took them home and stacked them in his study. When the study was full, he lined them down the hallways into the dining room and even the foyer. Ray nodded to a student who was seated in the hall. Outside his office, he spoke to a colleague. Inside, he locked the door behind him and placed the mail in the center of his desk. He took off his jacket, hung it on the back of the door, stepped over a stack of thick law books he had been stepping over for 30 years, and then to himself uttered his daily vow to organize the place. The room was 12x15, with a small desk and a small sofa, both covered with enough work to make Ray seem like a very busy man. He was not. For the spring semester, he was teaching one section of antitrust, and he was supposed to be writing a book. Another drab, tedious volume on monopolies that would be read by no one but would add handsomely to his pedigree. He had tenure, but like all serious professors, he was ruled by the publish-or-perish dictum of academic life.